Master cursed.
Gurave.
Unto his spiritual master Vishishta.
Adamavartine.
Who is induced to irreligious principles. Because he cursed his offenseless disciple.
Tava.
Of you.
Api.
Also.
Patatat.
Let it fall.
Deha,
the body.
Lobat,
because of greed.
Dharmam,
religious principles.
Ajanata,
not knowing. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. For unnecessarily cursing him when he had committed no offense, Maharaj Nimi counter-cursed his spiritual master. For the sake of getting contributions from the King of Heaven, he said, you have lost your religious intelligence. Therefore, I pronounce this curse. Your body will also fall. Please repeat. For unnecessarily cursing him when he had committed no offense, Maharaj Nimi counter-cursed his spiritual master. For the sake of getting contributions from the King of Heaven, he said, you have lost your religious intelligence. Therefore, I pronounce this curse. Your body will also fall. The religious principle for a Brahmana is that he should not be greedy at all. In this case, however, for the sake of more lucrative remunerations from the King of Heaven, Vishishta neglected Maharaj Nimi's request on this planet. And when Nimi performed the sacrifices with other priests, Vishishta unnecessarily cursed him. One is infected by contaminated activities, his power, material or spiritual, reduces. Although Vishishta was the spiritual master of Maharaj Nimi, because of his greed, he became fallen. Okay, should I read six now? Go through it. Pardon? Oh, I read four. Okay. That's not what I thought. All right. Okay, so we'll just do the translation. After completing the sacrificial performance for King Indra, the spiritual master Vishishta returned and found that his disciple Maharaj Nimi had disobeyed his instructions. Thus Vishishta cursed him, saying, may the material body of Nimi, who considers himself learned, immediately fall, of course, and then there was a counter-curse. So this is, it goes on a lot in Bhagavatam, you know, the cursing and the counter-cursing. And I know that Prabhu went over the story between Vishishta and Vishwamrita a bit, but I wanted to go into a little more detail, because it's a pretty amazing story. Basically, Vishwamrita was a great king, and he wanted to go on an expedition and examine his kingdom. So he went with his entire entourage, you know, his whole army, and they went in all the different provinces, just checking and seeing how everything was going. And when he came to Vishishta's abode, it was extremely heavenly. In fact, the Gandharvas, the Siddhas, and Charanas sported there. There was beautiful trees and creepers and flowers and vines, all kinds of fruits. And Vishwamrita was really happy to see Vishishta. He offered him all respects, and he was just happy to see how nice everything was. And Vishishta offered him some fruits and some water. And Vishwamrita was completely pleased. He said, thank you so much. I really appreciate your cordialness, and so I'm going to take my leave now. And Vishishta said, no, don't go. He said, that's not enough. I want to give you more. I want to feed you more. So he's like, no, really. It was perfect. Just seeing you and being here, I'm completely satisfied. But Vishishta insisted. He said, okay, if you insist, if it'll please you, I'll stay. So him and his whole army, they decided to stay and take prasadam. So what happened is Vishishta had this incredible desire cow named, her name was Shabala. And so Vishishta said, okay, Shabala, so you come. And this desire cow just produced, it said, like heaps of rice covered with ghee. Every vegetable preparation you can imagine, every kind of bread, pudding, cakes, pies, flowing juices, and you know, every milk product, everything, and fed Vishwamitra and the entire army. So they were completely satisfied, but Vishwamitra was like, whoa, I just thought of something I'd like. So he approached Vashishta and said, you know, you asked if there's anything I want, and actually, I want your cow. You know, I'll give you 100,000 cows if you give me that desire cow. And Vashishta said, there's no way I could ever part with Sabala. She's so important to me because she helps me perform my sacrifices, you know, providing the ghee that I need, and my sacrifices are meant to sustain the entire world, to help all the entire human population. But Vishwamitra was like, I'm the king, and whatever the best of anything should be offered to me, so you need to give that to me. And Vashishta said, that's not possible, I can't do that. And so Vishwamitra said, well, in that case, I'm a Kshatriya, I'm just going to take it by force. And Vishishta said, I'm a Brahmana, I don't use force, you know, and I'm forgiving. That's one of the main qualities of a Brahmana, they're forgiving. I forgive you, and I'm not going to use force because I'm gentle, and that's another quality of a Brahmana. So, therefore, Vishwamitra started to forcefully take Sabala away, and she was crying, the cow was crying. She was like, wow, what have I ever done? She was appealing to Vishishta. She actually broke away, and she said her perfect limbs were trembling, and she was, you know, standing, looking up at Vishishta, saying, what have I ever done to offend you? Have I made some mistake? Why are you not protecting me? And Vishishta said, I'm a Brahmana, so I can't really use my power, you know, against a Kshatriya. And Sabala says, well, if you just give the order saying stay, so the cow understood the deeper meaning of what Vashishta was saying. So he said, if you just say stay, so Vashishta said, okay, stay. And the moment that he said stay, Sabala was prepared to fight. So Vishwamitra got together all his 100 sons, all his weapons. They started this incredible battle. But the cow was able to produce every kind of weapon. It said, you know, weapons came out of her mouth, they came out of her udder, every kind of weapon you can imagine. And there was Vishwamitra completely humbled. You know what I mean? It said just like a turbulent ocean, he was calm. Just like, but he wasn't really calm. It just, you know, he was just humbled. So he was upset. He was upset. He was shocked that he hadn't won the battle. So he began to realize the power of a Brahmana, just like here we're seeing that, you know, according to your spiritual power and what you do, you can gain spiritual power or you can lose spiritual power. So because of that, Vishwamitra decided he was going to go and meditate. So he worshipped Lord Shiva, and as we know, Kamasitaisita Hridigyana Prabhadyantena Devata, that those with material desires, you know, they have distorted minds, then they worship the demigods according to their own rules and regulations. So he started to worship Lord Shiva, performing many, many penances. And when he had finally worshipped long enough, Lord Shiva appeared before him and said, well, what would you like? And he said, well, I'd like to have knowledge of weapons, of every weapon the demigods have, of Vayus and Varunas and Brahmas and Indras. And he just went right down the line asking for all of them. And so Lord Shiva said, okay, you've got it. He's like, okay, this is it now. Vashishta is as good as defeated. So he went back and he approached Vashishta and he started firing the weapons. And all Vashishta did, he had a staff in his hand. He just held the staff up. And fire was emanating from his staff. And as Vishwamitra threw the weapons, his staff just absorbed each one. You know, Varunas and Brahmas and Shivas and each one, he just got it. So again, he was completely defeated. So again, he went to perform austerities. And each time he performed austerities and then he went into battle, of course, he lost it. So he kind of had to start over again. So he started performing more austerities. And this time, Indra got worried. Uh-oh, he might take my place. So Prabhu mentioned that the other day, how Menaka came down to distract him. That was like 1,000 years when he realized, wow, I'm being distracted from what my purposes really were. And so he sent Menaka back, and he started performing austerities again. And again, Indra got scared. He sent down another demigoddess. Her name was Arumba. But this time, Vishwamitra got angry, and he cursed her. For coming here and trying to distract me, you become a stone for the next 1,000 years. But because he got angry, again, he lost spiritual power. So again, he started to perform austerities. And during this time, there was a king from the Lord Ram dynasty. His name was Trishanku. And Trishanku wanted to go up to heaven in his heavenly body. So he approached Vashishta. He said, I want to go to heaven, you know, in this body. And Vashishta was like, get out of here, you know. Don't you know that, first of all, you can't go till you die, and you have to have enough pious activities accumulated to be able to go. And he's like, okay, well, this didn't work, but let me try Vishwamitra, because he's accumulated a lot of pious activities. I'll go to him, and I'll see what he can offer me. And he also knew that there was this enmity between Vashishta and Vishwamitra, so he thought that might be an angle too that would work. So he went and talked to Vishwamitra, and Vishwamitra agreed that he would send him to heaven. So with all his pious activities, he started to send Vishwamitra up to send Trishanku up to heaven. He got about halfway up. Indra's like, what are you doing? He's not qualified. He can't come. And he started to come back down, but then Vishwamitra's like, no, stay. And the demigods are like, this is not possible. He can't come to heaven. So Vishwamitra was in a little bit of a quandary. He said, okay, well, I'm going to create another heaven with the same kind of hierarchy with demigods, etc. And Trishanku can stay there because I gave my word, and so I have to do it. So that's what he did. He created another whole galaxy where he could stay. So, but in the meantime, he thought, wow, this Trishanku, he's kind of like a bad news guy, you know. I don't even really want to stay here with him. So he went back to the forest. He performed more austerities. And he performed so many austerities that finally, like Lord Brahma came to him, Lord Shiva, and said, well, we've got a problem here, that he's performed so many austerities that the ocean's turbulent, that the earth is trembling. So they went down and asked him, please stop. You've reached your goal. You're a brahmana. So Vashishta came to Vishwamitra, and he said, oh, all glories to you, that your penance has made you a Brahmin, and I forgive you. And so they became friends again. But pretty amazing, this brahminical power. Another example that came to mind was the example with Ambarish and Durvasa. And Ambarish and his queen had been performing austerities for so many, such a long time, for, you know, a few years at least, and they were about ready to break fast, and as often happens, who shows up? Durvasa Muni. And so he's just about to break his fast. He'd been fasting from water and food, and Durvasa said he was going to go take bath. He'd come right back, and Ambarish found that the time for breaking a fast was approaching, and so he was getting nervous. What should he do? So he consulted his brahmanas, and the brahmanas said, well, actually, if you take water, that's like breaking your fast and not breaking your fast, so that's safe to do it. But when Durvasa came back, he detected that Ambarish had broken his fast, and he became furious. And you broke your fast, you know, I'm your guest, you're supposed to wait for me. And so he, you know, anger and greed is a big part of all of this, you know, with Vashishta and Vishwamitra, this example as well. He became angry, pulled out a tuft of hair, threw it down, created this big fiery demon to go after Ambarish. And so this fiery demon approaches Ambarish. Ambarish doesn't even, like, quiver, you know. There's no fear in him at all. It says because he's so connected with Krishna, he's so connected with God, that he just stands there. He's thinking of Krishna anyway, so whatever Krishna wants to do is fine with him. So Krishna, with a Sudarshan, he pulverizes the demon, and then the Sudarshan starts going after Durvasa Muni, and Durvasa Muni he's fleeing as fast as he can. He's going wherever he can think of for shelter, help. And he's not getting any. Finally, he goes up. He's so powerful that he's actually to go into the spiritual universe. And he bows down at Lord Narayan's feet and says, please save me from the Sudarshan. Wherever I go, I can feel the heat right behind me. It's going to devour me. And so Lord Narayan says, you know, there's nothing I can do for you because my devotees, they've given up everything for me. They give up their wives, they give up their children, they dedicate their whole lives to me. And because of that, the devotees are always in my heart and I'm always in their hearts. So if you want forgiveness, then you have to go to Ambarish yourself and ask forgiveness. So he retraces his steps, goes back to Ambarish, and, you know, goes down on his feet. And Ambarish is such a humble devotee that he feels so bad that this great sage, Durvasa Muni, even though he tried to kill him, he feels so bad that he's in this situation that he starts offering prayers to Sudarshan Chakra to please cease and desist. You know, don't go on with this mission. Please let him go. So again, Durvasa Muni, he sees this incredible power that a brahmana has. In both cases, this brahminical power is really something. Now, Prabhupada makes the comment, like, King Ambarish, he dedicated everything. He's a very famous king for dedicating all of his senses in the service of the Lord. He dedicated his eyes in seeing the deities, his ears in hearing the glories of the deities, his nose and smelling the flowers that are offered, his mouth and offering prasadam, and his head and bowing down to the deities, his legs and walking to the temple. So in all these ways, he was always engaged. And Prabhupada, he encourages us, in terms of a personal application, to follow the example of King Ambarish, that in doing this, that we'll also be so absorbed in love of Krishna that nothing will be able to touch us. Prabhupada also gave the example of when Maharaj Prakrit was cursed, that Sringi was the beginning of the downfall of the Brahminical caste. And you know the story that Sringi's father was a great yogi, and he was sitting there, he was meditating, totally in trance. And King, Maharaj Prakrit, the king, he was also going through his kingdom, checking on everything. He became very, very thirsty, so he stopped at the yogi's hermitage, and he just wanted a glass of water and maybe some nourishment. But the yogi was in such trance that he was unable to respond. You know, he was not in touch with his external senses. He was totally internal. So he wasn't bothering to respond to Maharaj Prakrit, not out of rudeness, just because he was so absorbed. But Maharaj Prakrit became offended. Now we think, well, he's such a great devotee. Why did he become offended? And Prabhupada said in the purport that both Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Srila Shiva Goswami, they saw this as a divine arrangement of the Lord, that Maharaj Prakrit, he got angry. So he got angry, and as he was leaving, he saw a dead snake. So he took the dead snake and he picked it up and he put it on the yogi. And then when the yogi's son, who was also a very powerful brahmana, said in that time, even children, you know, way they were trained and the way things were set up, they became very powerful. So he was very powerful, and he was very offended at that the king had done that. And he didn't think his father had done anything wrong. In fact, his mentality was, the king is a Kshatriya, my father is a Brahmana. How dare that the king come and offer for water from my father's pot? It's like a dog coming to his master and expecting to eat out of the same bowl. So because he was so angry, then he cursed Maharaj Prakrit to die in 10 days. And we know that whole story. But Prabhupada really makes a point of saying this is the beginning of the fall of the Brahminical class. And because of that, there's this idea of, how can I say it? Of, you know, looking down, you know, I'm a Brahmana, you're a Kshatriya, I'm a Kshatriya, you're a Vaishya, I'm a Vaishya, you're a Shudra. This idea, when actually everyone is a part and parcel of Krishna, we're all spirit souls, so everyone has their duty to do, and Krishna, he sees us all equally. Srila Prabhupada also really talks a lot about the, material modes of nature, and how our whole world is caught up in these modes of nature, mainly the mode of passion and the mode of ignorance. And Prabhupada says there's no question of happiness in the mode of passion and ignorance. It's just, it's not possible. See, someone may have so much money, he said they hardly know what to do with it. Like, you know, a multimillionaire, he's got all this money. What does he do? He pays money to get into a club, and he tries to hang out with the young women, and he drinks alcohol, and he just falls farther down into passion and ignorance. So he says unless society is promoted to the mode of goodness, then there's no question of happiness. And of course, Prabhupada really emphasized how important it is to raise the society into the mode of goodness and the mode of shuddhasattva as well, and the mode of transcendental goodness. And he relates the story of King Vena, and how King Vena, you know, his mother was the daughter of death personified, and his father was King Anga. And because the death personified was involved, when their child was born, King Vena, he was a pretty bad news kid. He was very cruel. He used to sometimes kill his classmates, his playmates, you know, when they were young, if they disturbed him. And he was enthroned. And the good part about him being enthroned is in the rogues and the thieves, they kind of kept their distance. But as time went on, the saints and the sages became very concerned because he wasn't keeping up any of the spiritual rituals at all. So they approached him. And this is how the government was back in that time. The Brahminical class was there to advise the king and advise the ministers and how to run. Like Prabhupada often points out that our government today, it's democracy, and he uses the term democracy meaning demon crazy. He said all Kali Yuga is full of sudras, and then the sudras, they elect another sudra who isn't qualified to rule, and then there you are, you've got a pretty big mess on your hands. So King Vena, he actually became so degraded that he when the saints and sages came to meet with him and to try to talk about the situation, because the kingdom was kind of becoming more and more degraded, King Vena, he said, well, you're just like a prostitute, you know, you're leaving your husband, you're going somewhere else. Like, instead of worshiping me, you're worshiping gods, when you should just be offering everything to me. And then they thought, wow, they actually started screaming, kill him, kill him, kill him. You know, he was so off base, you know, to be asking for the citizens to worship him instead of him directing, because the king is supposed to be the one that leads the citizens to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And if he doesn't do that, then he's not performing his duty. So again, by Brahma Tejas, by the spiritual power, the saints and sages did kill him. And you know how they did it? It's like amazing how they did it. It said from high-sounding words. From the sound vibration of high-sounding words, they were able to kill King Anga. I mean, I'm sorry, not King Anga, King Vena. Anga was his father. And Sunita, his mother, she was very upset. She preserved his body in scented oils. So because the king was dead, then the rogues and thieves, they started to increase. They started to come around more. So the saints and sages, again, got together, decided, what should we do about this? So what they did was they started churning the body. And at first, a bahuka came out. And after that, they kept churning. And Prabhupada said, this sounds unusual, but it's possible. Obviously, it happened. Like, you can see people who aren't devotees, who don't understand, they read this and they consider it mythology. But it was actual fact that would happen. So again, as they churned the body, a great personality, King Prithu, came out. And then as they continued churning, Queen Archi came out. And they were supreme rulers that knew how to rule the country. And these great rulers, just like King Yudhisthira was such a great ruler, it said that there was no problem in the kingdom. Like, wasn't supposed to rain. And even if a child died before the parents would go to the king and say, what is wrong here? You know, my child died and I'm still alive, and that means you're doing something wrong. You know, the king was really responsible for keeping everything pure and keeping the citizens happy. And it said that when King Yudhisthira started just subtly to notice a little change in the atmosphere of his kingdom. Like the season started to change. You know, things that, I mean, I know that happens now all the time. Like, it'll be winter time and then the flowers start to bloom, but then the winter comes back and all the flowers die. And so he was noticing so many different things, noticing a little anger and greed creeping into the kingdom. And he was thinking, what's going on? And even then, he was suspecting that Krishna might have left the planet, or he may be planning to leave the planet. So he was very, very concerned, because he was such a great king. So these Mahatmas were equipoised; they were able to rule with such grace, you know, with such ease, with such perfectness. And of course, we have our own Srila Prabhupada, who was able to do so much. Like, when I look at the painting here, like, I was here when that building was started, and I guess it was 76, and there was just nothing here. And you see by Prabhupada's spiritual power, and by his disciples' spiritual power, what he was able to accomplish. And I was reading about some of the comments by Srila Prabhupada's associates before he even came to America, and what they had to say about him. There was a pujari that I guess it was at Waitacharya's house, a pujari there, and he said that there was this grihastha who would come every month, and he would sit there in the back of the temple, and he would chant very carefully and finger his beads in deep meditation. Oftentimes tears would be flowing from his eyes. And he said every time that Prabhupada would leave, he would come up to him, he would thank him, thank you so much for your service, and he would go away. So that went on for quite a long time. And then Prabhupada didn't come for a while. And then again, Prabhupada, he saw somebody sitting in the back, but they were dressed in saffron this time. So he thought, I think that's my same friend. So he went, after Prabhupada got done chanting, Prabhupada came up to him and said, you know, my spiritual master has asked me to do something impossible. He said, he's asked me to go across the ocean and to bring Lord Chaitanya's message to the West. And I don't know how I can do this, so I'm asking for your blessings. And he said, I'm such an unworthy disciple of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, but because he's asked me to do this, I'm going to try to do it. So the pujari blessed him. And he said so many years later, he started noticing white Vaishnavas coming to the temple, and with japa beads and dhotis and saris. And, you know, he was curious, like, oh, what's going on? So one of them gave the pujari back to Godhead, and he looked, and there he saw Srila Prabhupada. He saw his old friend's picture, and he was really emotional, you know what I mean? That here, such a simple sage had gone, you know, on this trip across the ocean. And Prabhupada even said that on the boat, that there was such turbulence that they really thought the boat would sink. The captain said it was only due to Prabhupada doing kirtan on the boat that the boat didn't sink. And Prabhupada often uses that example too. When some of his disciples were talking and asking Prabhupada a question. They said, Srila Prabhupada, when we are transcendental, and Prabhupada said, wait a minute, he goes, you're not transcendental. He said, you're trying to be transcendental. And he said, just like a boat on the water, you know, the boat is, it's upright, but, you know, a big wave comes along or a big wind comes along and the boat can topple over. He said, so just like that, we're in a boat And the captain of the boat is the guru, and we're following the guru's instructions. And the shastras are the winds, you know, and the favorable winds that are blowing us along. So as long as we stay in the boat, as long as we follow the instructions of the spiritual master, and as long as we read the shastras, because Prabhupada was a perfect example of a yogi. He was most intimately united with Krishna, the highest of all. You know, he followed such strict sadhana. Even before he came, people who stayed with him said that he, every day, he got up early, he attended Mangala Arati, he chanted his rounds, he always heard Srimad Bhagavatam, he always heard Bhagavad Gita, and he always shared, he always had lectures, pravachan, he always had lectures with his with people who were nearby. And he didn't think he had the strength. He even told his sannyasa guru, he said, well, there's different things. Like one thing that happened was Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was giving a lecture, and he had sent different disciples to the West to be able to bring Krishna consciousness to the West, but they might have been a little successful, not much. They came back, very difficult. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was still asking his disciples, please go to the West, bring this knowledge. There's so many people there that are ready for it. And so once, this young man was in the lecture, and he was looking at Srila Bhaktisiddhanta as he said that, and he was looking at someone. And he was like, who is he looking at? It was like right near him, but he turned around, and then he saw that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was looking right at Prabhupada, and Prabhupada was looking at him. They were kind of having this intimate visual exchange, you know? So Prabhupada was speaking to his sannyasa guru and saying, you know, I don't think that I have the strength to be able to do it. And his guru said, whatever strength you have, if you use that strength, then Srila Bhaktisiddhanta will give you more strength and you'll be able to accomplish that. So we see that that's what happened. And Srila Prabhupada was always very conscious of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. I said, even when someone would bring a flower garland to him and try to put the flower garland on him, he would go, no, wait, you take the flower garland, and then he would put on Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's picture first, and then he would take it. So he never took any, that's the danger, you know, when we become, you know, a little spiritually powerful. We saw it with Durvasa, we saw it with Vishramita, we saw it with Vena. Become a little powerful, you become a little prideful, you become a little, you know, a little greedy. And so that if we can always remember that whatever we're doing is by the grace of Prabhupada and our spiritual master, then that danger of becoming a victim of pride and anger and greed, then it's not possible. And Prabhupada gave us such a beautiful program of being able to engage ourselves, you know, vacho vegam, manasat krodha vegam, jiva vegam, urapasta vegam, etan vegam, yovisaheta dira sarvam apimam prativim shusha. One can, that can tolerate the mind's demands, the urge to speak, and the urges of the tongue, belly, and genitals, is qualified to make disciples all over the world. So he talks a lot about prasadam and the prasadam prayer that we can say, you know, that please engage my tongue. There's so many ways to engage the tongue in chanting and in honoring prasadam. So Prabhupada always encouraged us to do and like that, you know, to be able to engage all of our senses in Krishna's service and to be able to take this message out. Like Prabhupada confided in his godbrothers at sometimes how difficult it was, you know, to preach. He even said one time, he said, you know, my disciples, they're a little bit like monkeys, you know, you have to excuse them because they come from this environment, you know, of ignorance and passion. But he said, you know, by chanting and by serving, they will be good. They'll come up. And once he was in a room with some of his godbrothers, and they started saying how they were worried about, what about when you leave, Srila Prabhupada, that your disciples, because they may cause a disturbance in Vrindavan, they may cause, you know, they may ruin our environment. And Prabhupada became so angry. You know, he said, you are blaming my disciples. And my disciples are so good and they're following this process and you need to help them. And if you continue this criticism, he said, I will never come back to Vrindavan again. And they were, we're so sorry. We'll make sure, you know, we won't say that again and we'll try to help your disciples. And so gradually his godbrothers and everyone saw what Srila Prabhupada was able to do. And really, we can see that as Kali Yuga progresses, that it's not just America that's being affected. With the media, with computers, with cell phones, the whole world is victimized by this. It can be used for good and it can be used for bad. But we can see many citizens of India also falling away. So I was going to read a quote from the Nectarian Ocean of the Holy Name, just how important it is to chant, you know, with attention, to follow, you know, in Srila Prabhupada's footsteps, because Srila Prabhupada can empower us to do anything. We've seen that, what Prabhupada has been able to do. I mean, look at what has happened here in Mayapur. Look at what has happened all over the world. I know I live in Alachua, and we have like a preaching center about a half an hour away in Gainesville, Florida. And the college there, they serve a prasadam lunch. They've been doing it for 40 years. And Garga Muni, who was a sannyasi, they had had some problem. It was four sannyasis who started preaching that Prabhupada was God, you know, because they love Prabhupada so much. He's so glorious. But big mistake, you know, Prabhupada became very upset when they said that. I'm not God, I'm a servant of God. So he sent them all out to preach, and Garga Muni went to Gainesville. And he was a pretty good cook. So he started cooking. There's a university there, University of Florida. He started cooking, and he started, feeding some of the students. And then he met Aravinda and Gayatri. They had a little apartment, so they said that Garga Muni could stay with them. And so Gayatri started cooking, and they started this whole program where they distribute prasadam with the students 5 days a week. And I mean, now there's probably over 1,000 students every day that take prasadam. And this has been going on for 40 years. And the universities tried to stop it a couple of times, but it was kind of like a revolution by the students. You know, they even have t-shirts that says all the reasons to go to UF, and one of them is Krishna lunch. They wear t-shirts that says Krishna lunch, you know. So it's really wonderful. And the university has at this time given the devotees a special place, their own place at the university to distribute Krishna lunch. So that also is like so amazing, like how far it's come, you know, in such a short amount of time. We have no idea how far it can come from here. So the chanting, and specifically going out on Sankirtan, but let me just read this. This is from Bhakti Thakur Sharanagati. There's no vow like chanting the holy name, no knowledge superior to it, no meditation which comes anywhere near it, and it gives the highest result. No penance is equal to it, and nothing is as potent or powerful as the holy name. Chanting is the greatest act of piety and the supreme refuge. Even the words of the Vedas do not possess sufficient power to describe its magnitude. Chanting is the highest path to liberation, peace, and eternal life. It is a pinnacle of devotion, the heart's joyous proclivity and attraction, and the best form of remembrance of the Supreme Lord. The holy name has appeared solely for the benefit of the living entities as their Lord and Master, their supreme worshipful object, and their spiritual guide and mentor. Whoever continuously chants Lord Krishna's holy name, even in his sleep, can easily realize that the name is a direct manifestation of Krishna himself in spite of the influence of Kali Yuga. So that is the beauty of the holy name, is that it's Krishna himself. And then if I can find this, there was one place where it was said that when you go out on Hari Nam, I don't know if I can find it though. Anyway, I'll just say it. When you go out on Hari Nam, it says that it's 1,000 times more powerful than chanting on your own, because you're sharing it with the world, you know? And Prabhupada said that when you chant Hare Krishna, it goes down the world like 7 times and it purifies everything in its path. So this yajna that we perform dutifully daily is not to be minimized, you know? It's like probably our greatest activity of the day. And I know for myself, I always try to get up early and chant, and if somehow I don't, that I can really feel the difference when I chant later on, because during that Brahma Muhurta, everything is really magnified. The mode of passion hasn't set in yet. It's really in the mode of goodness and easy to chant. So as much as just, it's beautiful in Mayapur, as we walk around, even go into Navadvip or different places, there's different, you know, Harinam parties and different parades where people are taking the holy name out to the world, and this is our duty, you know, this is our duty, and it's our greatest joy. And because as we become more and more purified, and the more we chant, then the more we love to do it, because as we rise to the mode of goodness, you know, things that are difficult, it becomes easier and easier for us to perform that duty, because we get a higher taste, we get that Param drishva nivartite, we gain that higher taste. So I think I'll stop here. And if anybody has a realization or a question or a reflection, anything that they'd like to say, please do. And if not, we'll stop here. Thank you very much. Oh, yes, you have a question. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, it's the beautiful thing about giving class is that you get to study and prepare and, you know, learn so much. So, thank you. All right. Hare Krishna.
Where do I find you? Will you be tomorrow morning here?
I'll be here tomorrow morning. Yeah.
Mangalarati or?
I'll be here for Mangalarati, but also for class, better class, because hard to see me in Mangalarati.
I put aside and I forgot to put in my bag. I wanted to keep for you and for Hari Puja.
Oh, that's okay. Tomorrow.
It's fine.